For December the 22nd, 2017, we talk about A Way Out, Doki Doki Literature Club, and we ask you about your most delightful game moments this year. Welcome to Level 224. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It is a podcast for people who love video games. Sorry, I'm unprofessional. I just got a text message from my dad. I'm not going to cut that out. Yeah. Welcome, everybody, to this, our last show of 2017. That's right. We're not going to be here next week because Tuesday is the day after Christmas, and I'm not going to be in town, and I'm probably not going to feel like recording, but we'll be back in the new year. God, this snuck up on me. I know that's a cliche. Like, I know everybody says that. It's just what you say. Oh, gosh.
Like, years going by faster?
maybe also possibly because, like, where I live, it's not like it snowed once. And so you don't get that, or also, you know, just you don't have the whole month. Any number of reasons why, like, Christmas just kind of seems to come up on you. I don't know. But it's a little bit like it's a cliche, like saying to somebody at work, like, oh, I know it's Tuesday, but it feels like a Thursday.
I know. I just figured it's all the, you know, general horror as America transforms itself into a third world country. Really makes the time pass.
2017's time dilation is incredibly real, but that has made the year feel like it is longer than it has been, or it makes recent events feel like they took place earlier, like a longer time ago. So that is another factor, but that would actually work in the opposite. I don't know. It's weird.
One down, folks.
Yep. One down.
We can only hope.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're almost there. Hey, David, welcome back.
Yo.
Yeah. You were away for a while.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of a move to San Francisco again. So.
We've all been in that phase before.
Yeah. That's very funny. Yeah. Well, we're happy to have you back.
Yeah, happy to be back.
Yeah. Dennis, we should talk about the toadies.
Yes, we should.
Yeah. So this is a little bit later than we usually do them. Usually we announce the winner at the end of the year. However, we're going to let that slip. Dennis, what are the toadies?
The toadies are the most prestigious award related to video games. Not in video games, but related to video games.
Right, next to. The most prestigious award for people who love video games.
Yeah. What would be the most prestigious reward in video games? Would that be like platinuming Dark Souls?
What's the item you get in Final Fantasy for like farming 99 of those like pink tails or something that have like a 0.1% drop rate?
That's like adamant armor. That's actually a valuable thing. Like it would be the earth harp that you get for beating Emerald Weapon of Final Fantasy VII or something like that. But that's not actually that hard. It's just a matter of understanding something like that. So the most prestigious award given to a game would be GamePro circa 1995 5.0 rating with the hair razor with the wild hair guy being like, whoa.
But this is a really cool stat, and I'm very proud of this. The Level has actually managed to win every single toady.
Yeah. you know, it's like the others don't even show up.
So we've run opposed every time. They're afraid of us.
Yep. You know, I have to say, we have built such an institution that nobody wants to step.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So this is the title of the year award. For anyone who's joined us in the last year and didn't get to participate in the fun, we put up all the titles throughout the year, and I don't know how much you pay attention to them when they're in your pod feed or, you know, wherever you get podcasts from. But reading all the titles in a line is instant happy. Like, I had to do it because Cole, you sent me the Excel spreadsheet today and just, I was grinning ear to ear by the end of it. So it's fun to just look back over all the stupid shit we say in a year.
Yeah, like, so if you don't do it after the, maybe you know this, after the credits, after we, you know, do our outro and the you know, the ending song plays, we talk about, all of us are writing now, we're listening for funny little phrase snippets basically, mm-hmm. and we kind of nominate them as titles and we talk about it and we say, oh, this one feels right for any number of like kind of soft reasons. And this is what we're doing, is we're putting it to everybody so they can vote on what their favorite one is.
Mm-hmm. So the cream of the title crop,
yeah,
is something that we leave up to listeners. And it's always really fun to see, if you don't see the link, when you're listening to this, you will see it incredibly soon.
Yeah.
And you get to kind of, rank them and give your input and see how everyone's voted. We do a big reveal. And as Cole kind of mentioned, we discuss a number of potential titles each week. And so we also have the A-Toady, is it almost title of the year or alternate title of the year? I'm not sure.
In my head, it's almost, but alternate makes more sense.
So you get to read all of those. And again, it's just instant happy in hanging corpse poetry, which is a nice callback to the original title of the show way, way back.
Yep. yeah.
Wait, exquisite corpse, not hanging corpse.
Exquisite corpse. is the thing we're talking about.
Yeah. So that's what we do. It'll be a SurveyMonkey link. We'll blast it out on Facebook and on the Slack and all the places, because we really enjoy it, even though it is just shamelessly.
It's really self-indulgent.
I was going to say self-indulgent.
Masturbatory. It's just, it's fun. let us have it.
It is. It's yeah. Super fun.
Do you want to, so we started doing this in 2014, mm-hmm. Which means that we have, three previous years. Should we prime the pump? Should I share what the three previous, toadies are?
Yeah, I haven't thought to look back. I like that idea.
Yeah. So from 2014, we have episode number 85, Nobody Puts Baby in the Fridge.
that was a late entry as well.
Yeah. And that was a reference to PT.
It was.
Oh, yep. You're right. You're absolutely right. from 2015, I don't have an episode number on this one. In Space, No One Can Hear You Jam.
I'm sorry. I went to that tab, but now I need to go lie down.
Why?
I'd forgotten about that one.
Yep. 2015 was also the year of the inception of Sugar Bone.
Oh, yes.
Oh. Yeah. That was number two. That's a runner-up.
Oh, my God. Yes.
And... finally, for 2016, this was another late entry, I believe, episode, or no, so this must have been early because of the way the numbers shake out, episode number 137, Chrono Trigger Warning. because that was it came from a multiplayer discussion where we're like, hey, what's your one gaming regret or whatever? Like, what's one thing in a game that made you sad? People are like, oh, yeah, I totally just like sold my copy of Chrono Trigger when I was done with it.
Oh no, I'm sad again. No, that's a good one.
Yeah, so like we said, this is dumb. Nobody gets anything out of it except us having some kind of it's like gratification that people paid attention to us, I suppose.
Thanks for indulging us.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm smiling again, like, yeah. My goodness.
I need to see here because also I need to make sure how see how prolific we are. In 2016 we had 295 A-Toadies.
Gosh,
295 just like titles that came up, we talked about, voted on, but then no, nothing, didn't work. However, we got more prolific. I don't know if this is because we did more episodes or what. In 2017, it's 421.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Now, there's a limit on SurveyMonkey on how many titles you can put into a single survey. So 2016, we had to break up into front half and back half.
Mm-hmm.
I'll check again hopefully it's not like 200 and 420 will fit.
Hopefully there might be some of these that are that are very similar to each other, and I can go take a pass. Like, I can throw away some that are just kind of like, that's an alternate version.
Sure.
But, cool. Yeah. So
that's coming. Check the Slack for it. Check Facebook for it, and yeah. And vote. We love to hear what you guys thought was funny.
Yeah.
So, and it goes into all of our script writing for next year.
Yeah. Yeah. It acts as the seed for the river for the Markov chain. Oh gosh, I'm looking at some of these ATODs. Taken out of context. So anyway,
they're alphabetized, so there's no relation back to the episode or anything. It's craziness.
Yeah. So very happy that we have that data. At the very least, it's fun. It's fun at least for us to look back on. But we've got the usual kind of show for you: the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And you're gonna notice I have my voice back, so you don't have to deal with that anymore.
Yay!
Why don't we get started with the grind, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Let's take a look here. News stories.
I'll go.
Go, Ben.
All right. There's a news about a game coming out this March called A Way Out, which I don't know how much we've talked about in the past, but it's by the team that made Brothers, Tale of Two Sons, which came out 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, we love that game.
Yeah. Similar concept where you have a co-op game. The difference is instead of you controlling both people, it's going to be a co-op game all the way through.
I was going to say, Brothers was not a co-op game.
It was, it was self-co-op. It was auto-co-op. Auto-op. Yeah.
It's a hand co-op. It's like thumb co-op. This one, it's two separate people playing it, but it's like a Prison Break type game. Looks really good. I'm excited about it. New details leaked for it about how it's going. The way they're pricing it is only one person needs to buy the game in order to play it.
That's smart.
Part of the reason why this is there's no like AI. You always need to play with another human being. So I'm not sure how that's going to work. I don't know if they're going to have matchmaking for it or not, but I think it's basically either split screen or online co-op that you can play. Nice. So question is who's going to play this game with me?
I'll do it.
Because I'm for sure going to get this. I'm really excited about this game. But
you got to be ready, Ben, because Brothers made me bawl like an infant. So we're going to have to deal with that. If they follow that same tack.
Here's what we're going
to
do.
To be fair, I am an only child and therefore completely immune to sibling-based nostalgia, so I may be a superior partner. We're jockeying for this, right? That's what we're doing?
Yeah, we can do tri-co-op where we can sub David in for the sentimental parts.
Do we have to? Yes, just while whenever Cole needs a minute, David comes in.
All right. We got a plan. I like it.
Yeah.
We should do it. It can be Ben and Cole versus me and David, and we'll race through it. I found a way to make the co-op game competitive. I was about to say compop, and that doesn't work.
No. Compop.
Cooperation, I think, is the term for that.
Yeah.
Cooperation. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is exciting. I think it's a good move to do it like that because it. It kind of sucks if you buy a game that's co-op only and you have no one to play with. So this kind of sweetens the pot. It's like you don't even have to buy anything. You can just play it.
Yeah. And it reflects the real price of the game. That's good.
Yeah. And the price of the game is only $30.
Right.
You can pre-order it now. Not encouraging anyone to do that, but the option is on the table. But yeah.
Yeah, it comes out
$30. That's nothing unless it's on iPhone. And that's insane.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's cool. Looking at the screenshots, the developer behind this is the guy who got up during the video game awards and like screamed fuck the Oscars or something.
Yeah, it's the director of the game.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah,
I have yet to watch that video. I feel like I should avoid it.
I actually just watched it today.
It's like the sentiment is fine, but like I don't know. I'm tremendously averse to somebody making a scene.
I don't know. I thought it was in good fun.
I'm sure.
I'm gonna chalk it up to jet lag, and I don't know what else.
Yeah.
I don't know. We have to see whether or not Like, Oscar feels it was in good fun.
What did Oscar ever do? He came out and, like, he did like some apologies for it. It's like, this doesn't seem like something you need to apologize for or explain. I think it was all out there, and I don't know that you're going to change anybody's mind about the thing you said.
Game Awards is pretty low
and
stakes.
I think pretty much everyone except for people who go to the Oscars probably agrees with them.
Probably. Yeah,
he needed that sentiment, whatever it was, 2 years earlier when everyone was hating on them.
Yeah. Hey, Dennis, tell me about this never ending field of flopping ding dongs.
Yes.
And we have a Tony.
Also known as mount your friends. A hard man is good to climb. So I'm channeling my inner Jala by bringing this story up. She is a noted fan of the original Mount Your Friends, which is a 2D kind of puzzle platforming co-op game where you are using kind of co-op-ish controls, or, you know, you control one limb at a time plus physics to make a giant tower of men. And each time you climb, you got to get higher. And, you know, if you fall, you lose your guy. So it's this fun little group experience.
It's like Cho and Nikki meets World of Goo.
Yeah,
inverse Jenga.
And the thing that makes it notable, while that core of gameplay is fun in and of itself, is the fact that all of the figures in the game are incredibly well-endowed men. Mm-hmm. Who are incredibly excited to show off how well endowed they are.
Where by men you mean like cactitrots?
Cactors.
Yeah,
they're very lo-fi. But there's jiggle physics in the game, but it's really more helicopter physics.
You spin me right. Yeah,
Which just contributes to the silliness and the fun, and I can easily see how this game is great after a couple beers, especially.
Everybody talks about their excessive hangdowns. However, I think that their prodigious nipples are the more I can comprehend the ding dongs. It's these nipples that I don't understand.
Well, and that is part of the move to 3D. I feel like after watching the little teaser trailer they did, really gives those nipples room to breathe.
Mm, yeah,
like you are able to have them accentuated in 3D in a way that just does not come across in the 2D game.
Well, some pop,
guys. Yeah, so I can't write down titles quickly enough. You need to slow down.
So we're starting random needs. point of order, according to the ponytail equation, they would probably not jiggle anyways. They would actually swing side to side.
The ponytail equation, what are you talking about?
It's a equation that was developed it basically seeking to explain why if you ever see someone with a ponytail running, you know, their overall body movement is up and down, but their ponytail will swing side to side.
Okay.
And some physicist was interested in why this is, and he developed an equation to prove, due to gravity and, I don't know, various other things, including a constant, which he defined as RA, the Rapunzel number. to scientifically prove that ponytails and presumably other long hanging objects would actually flop side to side.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
I feel enlightened.
continue, Dennis. They're bringing this to VR. I'm looking. I've had the video.
Is it VR?
What? Oh, the 3D. I'm
3D,
sorry.
Yeah, so that's the thing.
You seem very excited about that.
It's you climbing the tower. So coming to 3D, no real details yet, just the teaser trailer. Mm-hmm. And it looks like it will be a grand old time, especially if you have been drinking or enjoy this particular flavor of helicopter physics.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Neat. Well, that'll be cool. That'll make
also meat.
neat meat. But yeah, that'll be very So I'm just picturing, like, I've seen the structures people make out of these dudes in 2D, and I'm interested to see kind of like what challenges or what cool things people are able to make complexity wise now with three dimensions. I don't know.
You know how everyone was like so impressed when they made the giant llama fortress in Fortnite? Well, just imagine that, but with dicks everywhere.
No, let's not be crass. Ding dongs, please.
Pyramid of Giza.
Oh man.
So I'm just wondering, is this game on mobile? Because I feel like this would be the ultimate game to have on your iPad when you don't want the person next to you on an airplane to talk to you.
That's perfect. No, that's Danganronpa.
Oh yeah, that's true. Oh, why are those people covered in pink paint? Oh no. Yeah. Let's keep the sexy train going, because I saw some exciting news today. The Atlus game Catherine is being remade or updated or expanded upon for the PS4 and, strangely, the PS Vita.
It lives!
Yeah, it's great. I mean, like, stuff that came out in that generation, unless you have the 360 version, ends up being trapped. If you have the PS3 version of this, you have to have your PS3. Like, pile as many of these crazy games onto this arc as possible so they can continue to be played on something that is not a cell processor. Yeah, this new version is going to be called Catherine Full Body. Which is a double entendre. They say that it's primarily supposed to reference the fact that they add a third Catherine to the game, who is a piano player and wine aficionado. And her
isn't that the plot of Danganronpa 3?
What?
They had a third character to the game that's a piano player?
No, the protagonist of Danganronpa 3 is the ultimate piano player. Anyway, yeah, they add one of those, they add a third woman in, and it brings more kind of like endings. It's not like a traditional dating sim kind of thing. It's more of a fidelity sim, if that makes any sense.
And that doesn't explain it at all. Like, that doesn't at all explain, like, why you would name it full body. Like, that.
Like a wine will be full bodied,
I don't know. That's a stretch.
I mean, it's obvious that they're going for the fact that this is supposed to be like a sexy kind of game. But like, Catherine is very good. You know, we get in trouble for saying the anime word around here. However, like, it is definitely in a similar visual style to that. It's made by the Persona team. It ends up dealing with, you know, some kind of out there stuff, but like, for the majority of it, and it, you know, in the main body of its run, it is about like your main character learning how to like be a mature adult in a relationship, and kind of like dealing with him and his friends like growing up and becoming responsible themselves.
The game was kind of niche.
I mean, there's a lot about that's niche, because like, that's the part that everybody talks about. That's the part that you see. The main part of the game, like the main game part, is this really cool puzzle game, block pushing and block climbing puzzle game, where you're climbing these towers as gigantic demons chase after you.
Like, I mean, fitting for the nightmares you have in that sort of scenario. So.
Yeah, like they're like stress dreams. It's like him and these other dudes who are in similar situations, you know, and, you know, basically playing a game of death on these block towers. I was thinking about doing a stream of this, you know, just apropos of nothing, because it is horror themed. Now that there is a remake coming out, well, I can just wait for that.
That's perfect.
Yeah. Any other things about that? Has anybody else played that? Played Catherine?
I think I played the demo for it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Any word on what price it's going to come out at?
No. There's going to be a live stream later this week as we're recording. Maybe they will announce that. I would be surprised if it's more than $40, but who knows?
Yeah, same. Yeah.
Atlus does weird stuff with their releases. Like, they're not afraid to release stuff at not full price. Yeah.
Cool.
And finally here, David, round us out.
Sure. So this one is a little bit awkward because I found a really cool story and then realized that there was no way in hell I was actually going to be able to discuss it. So it's kind of a like, read this thing, it's really cool.
Okay.
So basically, someone published a super in-depth study of the graphics processing in Metal Gear Solid 5, and how frames rendered and lighting's handled and just all sorts of things. It's really, really fascinating. It's also like 30 pages long of like equations and before and after pictures and stuff. So there's no real like way to really go over it. But yeah, it's really cool. So you should read a thing.
Yeah, this is like somebody's personal blog that they're doing.
Yeah.
This has to be someone who has access to like all the inner workings of the game, right? Or is this someone who was not on the dev team?
I would have to say it's on PC, so they were somehow able to mess with like the shaders and stuff like that.
Huh.
Or look at the models and the mapping and stuff.
I do have to contest one thing. The depth of field on in the game is freaking bullshit.
What do you mean?
Just the whole like, oh, if you zoom in, we're gonna wait, 5 seconds to decide to not blurry the screen because that's totally realistic.
They're trying to be cinematic with like lens effects and stuff.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
don't know.
No,
Also, is this
depth of field is
actually
dramatic. Good.
supposed to be the last game in this series?
I mean, Kojima left Capcom under a real cloud, and Capcom doesn't, or not Capcom, sorry, Konami, left Konami under a real cloud, they're doing like Metal Gear Survive, but that doesn't, it's like an online multiplayer game with zombies and stuff. Like, it doesn't seem like Konami is really interested in making this kind of game anymore. So yeah, this is, yeah.
I think my NDA at Konami's up, so I can like badmouth them now.
Do you want to make sure of that before you do
Who knows? But totally
Live on the wild
understandable.
side, Ben.
Yeah, no, I won't burn too many bridges. No, but Metal Gear's like done.
Yeah.
That's really kind of sad that it ended on such a nonsensical note.
It started on a nonsensical note.
It did. If you go back, it did. Yeah,
There's a
this is.
difference between being eccentric and just I don't know.
Metal Gear Solid 5 is grounded compared to some of the stuff that even came recently before it.
I know. I think this series like strangely enough, the game somehow manage I think is going to both be my game of the year and also a game that I despise only slightly less than the Stanley Parable.
I
Wait, did it come out this year? Doesn't matter.
it's his favorite game that he played this year. I
Ah,
think
that's right.
is what he's saying. Yeah. If you like this kind of stuff, if you like this kind of breakdown, this seems to be real. It seems to really, really hinge on like the mathematics of the way these the shading and things like that are working, the different passes. Do a search. Eurogamer has a feature, like a column that's been running for a very long time called Digital Foundry,
Okay.
that does similar kind of analyses, particularly analyzing different graphics presentations across platforms and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
I just remember derping around in Blender in college and it taking like 40 minutes to render the most simple image. And then I look at all the shit that goes into this and I like it blows my mind
You're doing it 60 frames a second.
How does a video game ever happen?
Man, that
Yeah.
like specifically the Fox engine is amazing. Like, I'm really
Sure.
sad that nothing else is going to be made in that. Flair.
Yeah. I think in general, like if you want to like learn how to program things to be really efficient and really economical with how you do stuff with programming, like studying video games is the way to go.
Yeah.
Because it's like few things have to perform that like under that sort of condition.
Like the only Learn stuff C. that I could, you know, the stuff that I could think being like, you know, not similarly demanding because like actual like lives are on the line, but like medical monitoring software and probably like financial stuff has to operate to a really like tight tolerance too, right?
Actually, though, that tends to be in a lot of ways kind of the opposite, in that performance is generally very unimportant, but accuracy is really important. So
So it's less about like economizing and more about like just double and triple, like girding yourself against
Or you can do things like you can like program a language like Haskell where you can mathematically prove that your program is theoretically correct.
Yeah, and then upport it to something else. Yeah. Upport. That's a word. That is definitely a phrase that people use in computer stuff.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Toady.
Upport. No, but this is cool. I will it is a link in the show notes. If I could pronounce this guy's name, it's Adrian Courageous, something like that. I have no idea, but it's a link in here. I'm curious what else this guy has done. Oh, he did a graphic study for like Doom 2016. Neat. This isn't related to video games. It's a little bit related to like if we had a normal opening of the show, I would talk about this. Got a new car recently. Not gonna say what brand it is or whatever, but I got the car and I texted a picture of it to my mom and my stepdad and my brother and all that, and I texted a picture of it to my dad saying like, hey, I got a new car. You know, and you know, we talked about it. I explained what happened to my old one. He asked what kind it was, and I said, "Yeah, it's this one." And you know, it's reviews well. It's pretty safe. It's pretty cheap. Blah blah blah. And here is his sign of approval. my dad is a retired state highway patrolman. Okay, so this will make sense. I had a blank in a T-bone crash when they first came out, and it held up very good. 40 to 45 mile per hour collision, no medical transport. Pretty cool car. Good for you.
Shit. So, you gotta go out and ram someone now.
Yeah, I think he's put that to the test.
The person was a victim. The car in question got T-boned.
Yeah, you gotta put that to the test.
Yeah, this brand new.
Guess shiny... what, Dad?
Well, no, like he told me I did a good job.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, so I'm feeling festive. I'm feeling happy, in the mood for the holiday season. So I just wanted to pile on, you know, with that feeling good. So I asked, what is the best moment of pure, unmitigated joy that you've gotten from gaming this year?
Yeah, and Robert comes out the gate with my answer, saying, stupid walking and everything else about West of Loathing.
That's good.
It feels weird talking sugar about that game because like we know those dudes and just kind of like, oh, of course you would say this because your buddies made a game. Like I just, there wasn't a moment when I was playing that game when I wasn't just smiling ear to ear. You know, and that isn't just a matter of like, oh, that's like cute and funny, but like, no, it was consistently the funniest thing and had these jags of being just such inspired moments of surprising comedy that has a quality that is very rare, which is it is gentle and has no victim but is still as sharp as a fucking diamond razor.
Like, that is a hard line to walk.
Yeah, and they do it. Like, it's just that there's no way to, like, I just, it gets my unabashed recommendation. Like, you know, there are probably games that I would say like, oh, like mechanically this is like the, you know, a gigantic achievement, and it's hard to like stack stuff against it in terms of just overall like amount of joy received. It would be West of Loathing and just the moment that I found that stupid walking perk.
you are not alone too. Polygon gave it 16th best game of the year as well. So
that's, yeah. So Ben, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, I'm playing Divinity Original Sin 2. There's been a number of times when a small fireball accidentally causes a chain reaction right across the map. Just watching the explosion ripple everywhere is incredible.
And since that's a game you can play with other people, I'm just imagining being like an observer in the voiceover IP call, like, just, okay, I'm going to cast a fireball. Oh, shit, stop it, make it stop. No.
Oh, my God. So I had that experience playing Divinity. Oh, yeah, it was Divinity Original Sin, the first one.
The original.
Yeah, just the unintended consequences of all those crazy interactions is great. So I imagine they only doubled down on that in two.
I think my favorite of that part was at one point I apparently was just standing there for a while and David, what are you doing? Not now, I'm talking to a cat.
Ha ha.
You're doing what?
Don't ask questions. David, what does Adam say?
Adam says, four-player multiplayer is always lots of fun. The most recent was playing Overcooked on Switch with my neighbors.
I watched, I've been exporting DuckStream 2017 to YouTube here today. Like, went through and I categorized everything, got all the highlights, named everything. I wasn't around when they played Overcooked on the stream, but that game looks fun as hell.
I've not heard of it at all. Like, what's kind of the 3,000-foot, elevator pitch?
It is like
that would be a terrifying elevator.
it's like a top down 3D co-op puzzle game where each of you is a chef and you're each working different stations trying to put together like different parts of the meal, and you're trying to like optimize your routes as you're like running around and getting like ingredients or plates from one place to this other person. So like it's all of these dependencies that you're trying to work out as the kitchens themselves end up getting like more and more like crazy. Mm-hmm. Are working against you. It's like, oh, here's a kitchen that is like on the back of a couple of different like flatbed trucks, and only when they're next to each other like passing can you go up from like can you cross from like the refrigerator to the stove. So Overcooked looks cool, kind of flew below my radar, but I know that Nick especially loves that game.
Cool.
Dennis, what does Lindsay say?
Yeah, Lindsay says, I just bought Shadow Warrior on Xbox One, and it has me back to the old days of FPSs. If you like the new Doom, check it out. Anyway, slashing people to pieces in this is super fun and looks awesome, and dumb one-liners galore. That is what makes a game right there. Dumb one-liners.
You played this, right, David?
I actually played the sequel to it.
Okay.
But which... I would highly recommend, although it is very dependent on your tolerance for stupid.
Right.
But really, really solid series. And I do think that's kind of a pretty fair point. It a little bit did Doom before Doom was cool, although I don't think didn't quite as explicitly do the like, we're going to do a great version of retro type of thing.
Yeah. I could see that.
But yeah, very, very fun. I definitely recommend.
Neat. Yeah. Just from that description, it either sounded familiar or it sounded like a thing you would really, really enjoy. So it makes it just that that's why I asked the question.
Definitely. That was,
OMG Amoose says, for this year, it's a tie between basically any and all of the moments during PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, all the times when it's like, holy crap, did that just happen? In between replaying The Witcher 3 for WoW. Great multiplayer fun with friends in PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, but also Witcher 3 is just a pure delight to experience. Yeah, Witcher 3 is a real heavyweight. We just got done talking about it for a month straight, and I don't know if I'll end up talking about it here too much, but I started up Hearts of Stone, still really good. You would think I would be just sick and tired of this after 100 hours, but nope.
Here's a whole nother game to play.
Yeah, there you go.
I cannot. That is a game that is, in a very bizarre way, like, uniquely my kryptonite.
Oh.
To be, your kryptonite to, like, something you would be, like oh, man, this my shit, or, like, no, I hate this.
Well, the thing is, for me, inertia is huge for me in gaming, like, in terms of, like, if it's hard for me to, like, start up playing a game or jump in to play a game for a while, it's very likely I'm not going to spend almost any time in it. And because The Witcher 3 is so amazing at making every choice, you know, valuable and matter and stuff like that, the end result is just I never want to play it.
Oh, you're
wrong. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I want to say that shouldn't scare you away. That should draw you in.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I own it. Like, and the part I played, I really enjoyed. Yeah. It's more just like from a practical matter. Like every time I thought, like, oh, that's a really great game, I should get back into it, it's like, oh, but I have no idea what I'm going to do with this, like, you know, criminal that I just apprehended.
I've got responsibilities. I got commitments.
I mean,
people are counting on me. I can't go back there.
Do you want the serious answer, or do you want the let's move on answer?
Which is more entertaining?
I'm going to go with informative here. Even people who like go into it, like if you play it hot 100%, you know, just like, I'm going to pick this up and never put it down. The entire thing about The Witcher 3. Is you never know what the consequence of this of the decision you're going to make is. It's not just that the consequences matter, or, you know, like that, like, oh, your choices have like results, or they, you know, they manifest somewhere. Even somebody who is working with what appears to be complete information doesn't have it, and things spiral out of control. And the best of there's a gap between intention and result that is meant to surprise you and make you think about why you made the choice that you made.
Sure.
Right. Okay. So like, you don't need to feel like you are being quizzed on what the right thing to do is. You are very much playing a version of Geralt, and that version of Geralt is yours.
Huh.
Yeah. So.
So I semi related this, and I forgive me if I've said this before. When I was in San Francisco, there was a indie game developer conference, and the place I was staying at, there was two developers from Poland there, and you know, got talking about the Witcher series. It came up the fact that, like, the title makes absolutely no sense in English.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just really entertaining, like, trying to explain, like, this doesn't sound like to a native English speaker what they thought it would sound like to a native English speaker.
It's like a translation thing. Like, the over there, it's like it translates to like the hexer, like the person who deals with that. I just got the craziest sense of deja vu. have we talked? So we've talked about this before. I don't
Maybe
know.
We
if it's,
have.
I don't know. I, if we've been on the air.
I think it was mentioned at one point in time. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. Sorry. I just. You got through that, and it wasn't until I said the thing I said, I was like, oh, I've totally said this before.
Yeah, again, may that very well could be.
Well, we'll leave that in because that was funny. It's very funny if it's true. Am I talking out of my ass, Ben, about that aspect of it, about, like, you never have perfect information and things are always going to surprise you?
Honestly, I mean, I played the game, like, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, whatever came out. I don't even remember, like, any of the deep choices that you make or whatever. I just remember being so surprised by all the side missions of the game and being like, wow, they invested in making an entire creature just for this single side mission.
Uh-huh.
Let's be honest. You spend all your time playing the card game.
I did do that a lot, yes. I think I said that on air as well, where it was amazing that they buried this amazing game within a game.
Within another amazing game.
It's like, yeah,
no more, right? I think it's standalone now. Gwent is standalone.
It is now. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, people are bummed out because they made it too complex, I think, in the standalone. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. Ben, what does Brandon say?
Brandon says, Super Hot or Resident Evil 7? The pure fun of showing off the mechanics of Super Hot to anyone who would watch, or the fact that I got scared for the first time in a game since I was 13.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering whether or not he's playing those in VR or not, since those are both VR games.
Hmm.
I hope so, especially with the excitement of sharing it with a friend. Like,
yeah,
that's the response I've seen from people who have played Super Hot VR. So I imagine yes.
Yeah. And what's great is it could be either way. Like either of those are really impressive experiences, even without VR.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's not what's great. Another thing that is great about that. David, what does Nick say?
Nick says, I won't spoil anything, but the end sequence of Mario Odyssey is perfection.
Yeah, I need to do that over break. I got a bunch of stuff I want to read, and I want to play and beat Mario Odyssey. Do you have any?
That's when he finally returns home and slaughters all of Princess Peach's suitors, right?
Yes, it's basically Scott Pilgrim versus the world.
Huh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, Ben, you've played this. Is there anything you can obliquely say about what Nick is referring to?
So honestly, I think this was going to be my answer too, is I think my favorite gaming moment of 2017 was playing and beating this game over the weekend with friends in Seattle. And so this is a personal favorite memory, is we got close to the end, but I actually beat the game on my Switch on a train back to the airport when I was leaving. And I was like, amazed. I was like, this is amazing. But I was sitting next to a stranger who was going to a Seattle game, a football game. So I couldn't really share in the delightment. But yeah.
Ooh, delightment.
Is that a word? That might be a word. I don't know.
Definitely not a word.
It's good. It's got a good ring to it. Mm-hmm. No, it only pops up on. Oh, it's in Merriam-Webster. Okay.
Check the Scrabble dictionary. No,
no, it's just delight. It's just delight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh well. Let's see, Dennis. What does Michael say?
Michael says, my untamed obsession with Warframe drew some attention this year. Thanks to the kindness of Jeremy Greer and the rest of the Dark Insight crew, I got to be on a podcast episode. That was like a dream come true. I'm going to cheat and list a second answer. Helping with Jollade was equally heartlifting and surreal and meaningful to me. 2017 was a terrible year for a lot of stuff, but hope shines through even now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can second that. And then I personally love the art, because I've gotten to play with Michael in Warframe and in a couple of different games. But just the fact that he was this evangelist for Warframe before it was cool.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then watching all of the major sites do like think pieces on how amazing it is. Like, I can't imagine how vindicating that is for him. Like, I get happy just thinking about how happy that must make him.
Yeah.
So good on you, Michael. You were into Warframe before it was cool.
You did it. yeah. Graham says, the battle theme Last Surprise from Persona 5 is one of the greatest battle themes in any RPG. When the chorus hits you, you are overwhelmed with a song so catchy it transcends the game. When I first heard it, I had to put the controller down and just brace myself. Now this I have to hear. I'm gonna cut it in. Like, we're not gonna have it to respond to, but I'll edit in like the chorus drop, and we'll have the listener just decide if that comports. Seems like it creeps up out of nowhere. All the rest, you is not what to foretold. You never see it coming. Gotta love it when there's like one, not just one track, but like one loop from a track that,
sure,
you know, like, oh, here are the four bars that kind of like say why I love this game.
Like, I instantly remember where I was the first time I heard this.
Yes. Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Josh say?
Josh says, jumping back into Horizon Zero Dawn to check out the DLC and seeing again how beautiful the game is, the amazing environments and machine, bonus with having the surround sound set up now, and is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, huh.
Surround sound makes a difference.
Yeah, I agree with Josh. I think that's an amazing game, but I'm not a huge fan of playing the game, but I think it's like a really pretty game, and I think it's really well made.
Dennis, you'll know this. Is that a game that has a photography mode?
Yeah, okay. And that's the first photography mode that I actually spent excessive time with, and they actually had patches just to improve the photography mode.
I'm getting deja vu. I feel like I've heard you talk about this before.
Yeah. That's crazy that this is the one that you spent the most time with, because you fucking love Naughty Dog games.
Mm. Do they have photography mode on like the Uncharted games?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I think it's like just there's a little like a bit deja more vu pun I can work in here or something, but
deja vu is like the name of a like a British television show or something.
Deja 2.
You know what it is Naughty Dog games are not open world, although they've made some feints in that direction with certain levels. There's just something about being able to roam anywhere that makes you more confident or excited about the unique things that you find. So whereas, you know,
I
see something beautiful,
was open world.
No, it was
no, so aren't the last two Jak and Daxter games too?
Jak 3 and Jak 2 are to some extent. Yeah.
In the latest game, like Lost Legacy, there's some open world parts to it. But,
well, and,
yeah,
and there are in 4, but it's like, I think it's more sandboxy than sandboxy sections
it's,
of the curated
level. It's primarily a corridor first person or third person game, but yeah.
And it's a very wide corridor sometimes. That's great. But it's so in an Uncharted game, though, or in a Naughty Dog game, when I see something really cool and beautiful, I kind of assume that everyone has seen it, and it's like, yeah, I saw that because I'm supposed to see it. Whereas in Horizon, you kind of feel like, oh my God, I stumbled upon this. I need to share it with everyone else because I don't know if anyone else has been up here.
Somebody obviously made this, but it feels like it's just for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Or that I discovered it.
Yes. Yeah. let's see. Who read that?
I did.
You did, Ben. So that means, David, what does Javier say?
I didn't know we still had people. They posted since I lowered this page.
People moving, people moving quick.
Javier said, rediscovering Kingdom Hearts with the remastered edition with my kiddos.
Yeah.
That's crazy that they worked your kiddos into Kingdom Hearts. How did you make that happen?
he knew somebody at Square. Yeah, yeah. All the junk that I personally talk about Kingdom Hearts is like, oh, it's totally not for me. But like, if your kids are enjoying it and you're bonding over it, then that's cool as hell. So,
show.
That's a series that like I need to get now that it's finally on a system I have.
Oh, now it's on PS4.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Dennis, what does Carson say?
Carson says the ending hours of Persona 5, which I think was that our first repeat of the night.
I'm getting some deja vu here. Yeah.
Stop it. When you face the final series of bosses and the final gunshot just rocks, Rivers in the Desert is the best song in any Persona game. And when you get to the point the lyrics hit, it's a badass experience and you know it's on.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to cut that fucking song in, too.
It can work for yourself.
It's now or never, and I've got to make my decision. This time it could be my moment. A mirage or a chance to fulfill my mission. I'm living in a
No, I'm curious because Persona 5 is a game that I ill-advisedly bought, and I know I'm never gonna have time to play it. So,
what'd you buy it for?
PS4.
Okay,
that's all.
I don't know why.
Drinking sometime, Cole.
What's that?
Let's go drinking sometime, Cole.
How is it you have two fucking kids and you still somehow have time to play these things?
I don't sleep.
Okay, there we go. I sleep too much.
So. I don't know why, but the Persona 5, I just despise the character designs. Just like, I don't know.
Oh, I think it's stylish as fuck. So.
I don't know. I just feel like every time I see a character from that game, they just have a face that is purpose made to be punched.
I mean, with something like that, it is going to be like Persona 5, and anything that team makes is going to come down to like, oh, this just has to be to your taste.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, which is fine.
Yeah. Let's see here. Thank you, Carson. I think this is the first time I've seen you write in, Carson, so thank you. And if you've written in before, I'm sorry, I forgot you. It's a case of jamais vu, where something familiar ends up not being familiar.
You made that up.
No, it actually... no, it actually is. Jamais vu is a thing.
Isha who?
Mike writes, I've been feeling pretty off of games this year, with a few exceptions. That lack of commitment led me to pick up a FIFA game on an Origin sale, and it's been fantastic. I know it's fashionable amongst most gaming circles to shit all over sports games, but the feeling of sitting down to play a nice soccer match really hit the spot this year. I just wish EA would make NHL for the PC.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, do we shit on sports games? I purposefully don't.
I think we I just don't play them.
I made a Planned Obsolescence crack earlier in
about,
the episode.
About Madden, but that's more about their strategy, not about like either the games themselves or the people themselves in the moment.
Yeah. I do really want to play Blood Bowl sometime. That looks really good.
Yeah. Pyre.
It's a fantasy
sports Pyre. Game. Yeah.
And that team has earned a lot of trust. Yeah. Trust. I swear I'm not drinking. It's just.
Then start.
let's see here. Finally, Ben, what does Sasha say?
Sasha, by the way, hi, Sasha.
Hi, Sasha. It's been a long time.
I know. Sasha says, low manning Twintania with two friends. We worked so hard at that and failed spectacularly so many times. Finally beating that fight was unspeakably fun.
So, can someone give me some context for this? I don't know.
Twintania, I had to look this up. It is a boss creature from a late game quest in Final Fantasy 14, which makes sense because I know Sasha likes Final Fantasy
games. Online, right?
Yes, that is the that's the current one that a lot of people play.
I've heard so much good stuff about that game. That is a weird, like, I don't know. It just exists in kind of a weird spot.
I've had many Dark Nights of the Soul where I've stopped and thought, like, do I just buy an MMO and like play a little bit of it, because it still bugs me that there is a mainline Final Fantasy game that I haven't played at least a little bit of.
Well, wait, you don't have to buy it though. Hasn't it gone free to play?
No, it's pretty inexpensive, like to buy a Realm Reborn or whatever it is. If it is free to play, I forgive me, I don't know. I think that it is still enough of a going concern that that people pay to play it. So
sure.
Yeah. But that's cool.
Let's see here.
MMO accomplishments.
Free trial, not free to play.
No, makes sense. Yeah. Makes perfect sense. So yeah, thank you, Sasha. And thank you everybody who wrote in, especially on late notice here. We were talking in between the sections here. It's amazing how quickly people fire off with these.
Yeah, you guys are the best.
Yes. So great. Thank you. Just it's been a great year for these two. So yeah, just Jeff Fingers. So I already said mine. Robert snaked mine. West of Loathing. And just the general sense of glee that pervades the entire thing.
By snake, do you presumably mean he snuck up to you in a box and like stole?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Ben, I know you said yours might be Super Mario Odyssey, but I know you usually bring a couple, so.
I will double down and confirm and say Super Mario Odyssey, I think, was the best gaming experience I had of the year, which is not a very original opinion, but maybe more generalized. Just being able to play a Switch on an airplane was an amazing experience, where it's like, wow, I can make 3 hours go by really quickly. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah. The Switch in general is like a good runner up for me. Like getting one of those and like spending time with it and breaking in and seeing like, not how, like, it feels weird to say like how perfectly it fit into my life, but like this is very much exactly what I needed at almost exactly this time in terms of like the way that you play it and the opportunities that it opens up for you.
Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge Zelda fan, but I'm a huge fan of playing Zelda when I'm on an airplane. So.
It's not like you're going to say something, Dennis.
No.
Okay.
I can chime in with mine, though.
We usually go in the order that I send everybody. Don't.
I did not know this.
Yeah. David, how about you?
I think Warframe would definitely be up there. In particular, I'd say once you really get the handle on the parkour movement system and can just fly through the levels, I'd say maybe also once you start getting to like mid to end game and the weapon upgrade system just completely breaks down and you can like one shot someone with a shotgun from across the map. it becomes a lot of fun. I'd also say as I kind of discussed a little bit earlier in a weird way, at least some parts of Metal Gear Solid 5. I don't know. I really enjoyed just pretty much all the interactions with Quiet. Just her being your adorable little psychopath. I don't know. Like I had a lot of fun just messing with guards and then getting tired of messing with guards and having her, you know, massacre the entire outpost.
Quiet, kill. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Dennis, now it's your turn.
It all boils down to one word for me, executed. And so this is an XCOM 2 reference, of course, because I've talked about the roller coaster of extreme highs and lows that game is. But you can put a repeater on your weapons if you find one, which gives you a 5% chance to immediately kill whatever you're shooting at, regardless of how much health it has left.
Okay.
Which is just rare enough that you always completely forget about it.
It's like a D20 roll, like, oh, on a critical, like on a natural crit, you will.
Exactly. No. Yeah. And so it always comes as a surprise and the word executed pops up on the screen and you have this big, you know, crazy moment. And twice I have executed I don't even know how to describe it, like the DLC alien bosses.
The Chosen.
Not the Chosen, it's the monsters from the pre-Chosen DLC.
Okay.
I'm sure that makes no sense. But anyway, they've got like 50 health points. It's designed so that they've got 50 health points and they get to take a turn every time a character takes a move in your game.
Jesus.
So instead of like all your characters take a turn and then all their characters take a turn, it is literally now one for one back and forth. Ugh. Whenever you discover them.
Move five times as quickly as you.
Exactly. Yeah. And most of the time those moves include things that will debilitate your characters. And you know, just, you know, they are Iron Man run enders. And so when one shows up, it's immediate pause and you spend about a half hour, or at least I do, staring at the screen, scrolling through your options, trying to figure out exactly how you're going to sequence things.
What am I going to do? What am I going to do?
Yeah. I guarantee you I have audibly said that while playing XCOM 2. And then so you spend all this time planning and then your very first shot has, you know, and you forgot that your guy has a repeater, right? But your very first shot executes this boss. That, like, that swing of emotion is so crazy. I have literally done a happy dance. I'm not proud, yeah, but I have literally done a happy dance.
See,
for executing an alien ruler.
The problem isn't that you did it, is that now that you said it, people are going to say, oh, send us a video of your happy dance.
That doesn't sound like a problem to me.
I'll tell you what, the next time I execute an alien ruler, I will make and share a video of my happy dance.
That's up to you. I wasn't compelling you to do that. I was just going to say, that's what you risk by bringing that up.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand. I understand. Okay. I feel comfortable putting that out there.
Yeah. Cool. So it's the roller coaster was your moment of delight.
Yeah, I think so. Even just from the swing of it is what made it the most joyful.
Nice. Cool. Well, thank you, everybody, for participating in the final multiplayer of the year. This is a fun one. Thank you, Dennis, for ending us on a positive note here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you want to participate in these, they go up on Tuesday afternoons. And also we take suggestions, but those are mostly in the Slack, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're free to share it in any channel. We record every time someone suggests a question and pull from that frequently. So please, we love to hear suggestions.
Yeah. So no episode next week, so no multiplayer, but keep an eye out. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheLevel Podcast. And thanks so much to everybody who responded.
Your multiplayer next week is to vote for Toadie.
Yes, there we go. The grind. Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. David, you have been away the longest, so I'm going to throw to you.
Sure. So I got in. Sorry, I was trying to think of, like, when was the last time I was here and actually talked about things? You know? I started to get a feeling of deja vu. It was kind of weird. No, I actually started playing Path of Exile. Have any of you guys messed with that or familiar with that at all?
Path of Exile is the very big free-to-play multiplayer focused, like Diablo 2 alike, that came out. Right. It's been out for several, at least 5 years now.
No. Mm-hmm. It is the world's largest skill tree that happens to have a video game attached.
Okay.
To be fair, their skill tree, at least someone claimed, I obviously did not count, has over like 1,000 nodes in it.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So
makes sense, but is that
a casual game?
Yeah, you dip into it every once in a while. Is that a correct summation though? It is a Diablo 2 alike.
Oh yeah. It is very explicitly it's Diablo 3. We don't recognize that the other one happened,
except for all those people who played it and are really happy having played it.
Just we call them casual. Cool.
Okay. It continues like a path from Diablo 2 to what Diablo 3 might have been.
Right. Yeah. And I it's an interesting game. It actually has some kind of interesting I guess innovations. I think my favorite that I'm kind of disappointed no one's stolen is that your health potions are loot items, and so they can then roll with various stats and stuff. But then the way they work is instead of having to actually like scrounge for loot items because they're consumables, just every time you kill an enemy, you get 1 point towards them, so they basically fill up from kills.
Okay.
So it's just, this stuff, even though it is an extremely retro game, there's stuff like that is definitely shows some innovation. Similarly, their skill system is pretty crazily complex. Basically, each skill is a gem that you socket into your gear, and then you can socket other gems into the same piece to modify the way it behaves.
Oh, so it's like a materia system.
Yeah. It can get kind of crazy. So I think my favorite is there's a skill called Molten Strike that basically when you hit someone with your weapon and these like four like balls of magma kind of just fly up in the air and land, it's basically an AoE. But you can attach it to with a gem called Ancestral Call that basically causes it to also attack nearby enemies whenever you use the skill. So it basically just you become like this portable volcano that can just decimate entire hordes of enemies.
Hmm.
Similarly, there's skills that cause a skill to become a totem. So basically, you become a turret, effectively.
Okay.
There's ones that cause the skill to be activated on certain events. So like, when an enemy gets a critical hit on you. So just all sorts of stuff.
Is there a class system in this game?
Yeah, so there is, but as Dennis alluded to, it's a completely open class system. It has this huge passive tree, and the class system only determines where you start on the tree. It doesn't actually determine anything about like what you can or cannot do.
It's like I want to say Final Fantasy X had a system like that.
Literally took the words out of my mouth. It's like the sphere system. I forget the sphere table.
Sphere world.
Yep. Yeah. Sphere orbs from Final Fantasy X. God damn it.
And noteworthy with that is kind of scattered throughout it.
Sphere grid. Okay, sorry.
No, I'm pretty sure it was sphere orbs.
Sphere world. Okay. scattered throughout.
Otherwise
it,
known as Earth.
Scattered throughout it.
It's the sequel to Flatland.
Scattered throughout the board.
Oh yeah, no. Scattered throughout the board are basically nodes that. I forget what they call them, but basically they dramatically change the way the game plays. So, like, I have one that makes it so that my attacks always hit, but I can no longer get critical hits. You can get ones that make your spell casting use health instead of mana. Ones that give you a bunch of basically a regenerating energy shield, but you only have one HP. Just all sorts of stuff like that. So it's, you know, there's some pretty crazy builds people come up with.
Okay.
Other than that, the storyline's kind of interesting. It's it's kind of your traditional fantasy fare, but it's got a lot of influence from New Zealand culture.
Okay.
And kind of the plot line
like Maori stuff, or
yeah, exactly. So it's like that Disney movie, but with a lot more cannibalism.
Okay.
And kind of the plot line is basically you're start out the game as a criminal who's sent as this, outcast to this, other continent where just like everything's trying to kill you, which is kind of interesting because that combined with, with New Zealand thing, you're basically the game takes place in Australia.
Okay.
So it to the point where I actually just got to a zone where I am now fighting drop bears.
Okay, yeah.
So it's really interesting. I like it. It's got a interesting It's got a interesting tone in that it's very kind of dark and sort of amoral, kind of in a Dark Souls type way, but I would say with much less emphasis on kind of in a little bit more of kind of a nihilistic type of bent where, it's much less like, we know, you know that eventually the shoe's going to drop, and much more just like there's actually not going to be any consequences to you doing things you clearly probably should not.
Right.
And it's kind of interesting. Like one of my favorite and maybe kind of the most explicit thing of that is one of the progression systems. There's basically eight masters that are represent sort of the basic motivations of the different like classes or factions. So there's like, one that's this like crusading Templar that's trying to protect the holy sites and destroy evil. There's like a necromancer There's a defender of nature, those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really interesting because all of them, you can ask them like their opinions of the various other members.
Okay.
And they do a really interesting job of having a lot of them not be the way you would expect.
Don't play into the archetype or stereotype.
Right. And so for example, the person who's all about defending nature is a really big fan of the necromancer character, because she basically use her as being like someone who, has an understanding of like the corruption that the land is facing and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Huh. And so it sort of with that does a real interesting job in that, like, everything in the game is going to shit, but at the same time, it's not a game that's ever going to like ding you for like if you want to raise the dead and use that to defeat evil, the paladin's gonna be like, hey, gets the job done.
So here's my question for you. Is this the first time that you've picked this up in earnest?
Yes. I bounced off of it pretty hard earlier, partially because the game's super set up to be like ultra ultra hardcore kind of bro gamer type thing. And in with that, they refuse to implement a respec system.
Oh, geez.
Woo.
I should say they had a rare item that could let you respect a single skill point of the 100 or so that go into a build.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of checked in, and they still kind of hold to that, but they've backed off on it a good deal.
That stuff softens over the course of a game's life. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was a lot of what kind of allowed me to get into it.
Okay. So this is just like a historical question. Sorry if you don't know the answer to it, but like, game's been around as like a primarily online service game for 4 years, going on five now. Like, it shipped with a story. Like, this has a campaign. Have they been expanding the story or giving you more stuff to do, or is this a game that like is leveraging its massive sprawl of a skill tree to like get people to keep coming back and play it over and over again?
Sure. So from what I've seen, some of both. In that it initially launched with like four acts and like three difficulty modes or something like that.
Okay.
And it's now up to like 10 acts, but no difficulty modes. It just gets progressively harder as you go.
Okay.
And so from what I understand, for at least for a significant portion of its life, it's they've kept adding things. They also have basically an end game where you can get maps. Item drops their maps that can have the have various loot modifiers and stuff, and those in effect are allowing you to play with the random level generator seed.
Okay.
And so that's kind of the way the end game works. The other thing they do, though, is they do kind of a league system where, I don't know, every so many months they start a new, they have a game mode where you can start it up and, everyone has to start with completely new characters and, play through the game, and it's, who can get to the highest level by the time it ends.
Okay.
But there's modifiers on it that change the way the game plays. So like the current one I'm playing with, there's basically some sort of creatures from the game's equivalent of the Underdark are invading, and so there's areas where all of a sudden they'll start like busting up out of the ground and attacking you.
Hmm.
I know there's been ones where basically they had a game mode where they released a whole bunch of their old gear. Yeah, and kind of the equivalent of like EverQuest, like what is it, legacy gear or whatever, things that had gotten balanced away and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's also kind of a thing. And my understanding is they get even weirder. They had one that was just a single map from the game, but just over and over again with random seeds. And you'd just play through the game over and over and over, and you could never buy or sell items, but they set it up to just be incredibly generous with the loot drops.
Okay.
So they
got you on that treadmill.
Apparently. So, but yeah, it's interesting. I'm really, really enjoying it.
Nice. Cool. What else?
The only other thing I would say isn't so much as a game, so much as I guess a gaming anecdote. Last weekend went to a Hanukkah party with one of my friends.
That's fun.
And she's super into gaming and super into Star Wars. So we spent a lot of time discussing the loot box controversy in Battlefield. Or Battlefront, Battle something.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know whether or not you know it constituted gambling and that sort of thing. And she's very much of the opinion that you know it does constitute gambling and that teaching kids to gamble is you know morally reprehensible.
Okay.
And I then asked her what her feelings were about Dreidel, and she told me to get out.
Here's the thing. I think that discussions about religious hypocrisy are, you know, worth having in the proper context. Maybe not about their top that gives them chocolate. Oh, geez.
Well played.
Oh, that's funny. I'm gonna do mine.
Sure.
Because it's been a lot of visual novel stuff. I don't know like what hole I fell down where this just ends up being the things that I'm playing, but you know, I know what it is. I was sick all last week. Mm-hmm. Had to play Child of Light for Watch Out for Fireballs, finish that up. Spending most of my time in bed, a lot of what I have on my Vita is PS, you know, but the visual novel kind of stuff. Finished Danganronpa 3.
Cool.
The cases are good and surprising. Like, I think that this is the best mechanically that the trials have been. You know, just
because the world's great. It's the world's honest Danganronpa.
Yeah, it's So like the stuff that they have added, you know, like the purger system, the agree system, like all of that adds texture and makes you think about contradictions in a different way. It makes it less of a like a quiz about have you been paying attention to the evidence, and has you thinking more like a detective insofar as like it, you know, it is expecting you to think around corners, right? And so mm-hmm. like that stuff is good. I think in the grand analysis, like the way everything shakes out, I'm kind of bummed out by the story. Like, I appreciate everything that it does, and you know, like Danganronpa 2 before it, it takes a completely bug nuts twist that I cannot discuss at all. I was just more satisfied by the 1 and 2. And it's one of those things, right? Like where I can appreciate intellectually, like it's the, oh, I see what you did there kind of thing. Which, you know, of course it's a thing, like, okay, I acknowledge that there was like that takes some inventiveness and that takes balls, for you to have done that. I don't know if I don't know if the juice was worth the squeeze, as Gary says. Right. However, the characters are endearing, you know, just like any Danganronpa cast. They're going to put you off initially, but as they start dying and it winnows down to the people who you're kind of like stuck with and working together, you know, working alongside, then it starts becoming like, yeah, I actually, there are increasingly few of us. And I don't want the person that I really, really like to die. You know?
Yeah.
So yeah. As a conclusion to the series, who knows? But I, you know, like as a takeaway from it, it's like I'm gonna be thinking about this and thinking about kind of my relationship with the series as a whole based on the way that they ended it. So that is a kind of success. It just wasn't like the oh, the back of my head has blown off kind of thing that that Danganronpa 2 was.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis, you played the most of these. Do you have questions or observations or concerns about this?
I can't ask anything that I would expect you to answer is the problem. I read a headline saying that it kind of redefines or the ending of 3, you know, kind of somehow puts the entire series in a different light or sends it in a new direction or
right.
was big. But
great, yeah, that was an article that Griffin McElroy, it was like an opinion piece that he did on Polygon.
There you go. And I had to avoid it because I haven't played it yet.
Right.
I'd be interested to hear more about you. You mentioned the agree system and then one other.
Yeah. So I talked about the perjury system a while back. It's the idea. Okay. It's the idea that like calling out a contradiction or moving forward out of like the nonstop debate kind of things, you know, where the individual people are talking, raising points, and certain words are highlighted as being like, okay, this is something that you can respond to with a particular piece of evidence, or as they call it, truth bullets.
Mm-hmm.
It is not just like I need to say something in the affirmative that is true about this particular evidence and the way it contradicts that particular thing. The like the perjury system, like the lying system, like you have to like spend from your health to do it, so you need to make absolutely sure that it's the right thing to do. You can basically fire a truth bullet or use a piece of evidence and say the opposite of what is true is true.
Huh.
And every case, you know, has one of those moments, just like every Danganronpa case has like the same handful of dramatic beats that it's going to hit, has one where you absolutely have to do this. But there are times where you can tactically lie about something and it will like pull you into an alternate kind of like path for the case, because as you're making your case, you know, you're pretty much fighting against the conclusions that other people have already made and the way that they're talking in circles around stuff that is obviously not true. Like lying is a way to like shake them out of that and take them onto your path. And that plays into a whole theme. Like every Danganronpa game has a theme to it. This one is like, what is the nature of truth versus lies? And does it actually matter?
Huh.
And so that is the one that plays into it. The agree system, it plays out in those debates the same way. Like certain words will be highlighted. However, you don't have to be contradicting with somebody. Like what you say is, oh, this person made a really good point that's going to move us forward. Here's the evidence that supports that.
Yeah, I think that is in the first, or sorry, in the second game.
Is it? I couldn't remember. When it was introduced in 3, that felt new. But you could be absolutely right. You've played 2 more recently than I have.
Yeah, if it's not in there, there's some variant of it that's in there.
Yeah. Yeah. So those things are cool. I like those. But again, it is hard to have an in-depth discussion that wouldn't ruin the game for people who haven't played it. Be incredibly boring for people who haven't played and don't care. Or C, just be for the people who have played it and do care. So it's frustrating to talk about these visual novels like this, and it's going to make people really mad when I do like a brief little statement about the second game I've been playing. But yeah, like it is hard to have a further discussion about like what is, if not cool, then notable about Danganronpa, you know, without falling into one of those traps. Yeah.
I look forward to being able to do some kind of spoiler cast with you on it eventually.
Yes. Well, I have it in a physical copy, so if you get me drunk, you can get a hold of
Cole,
it.
Cole, we should go drinking sometime.
Yeah, we should, yeah.
So what are you guys doing in a week? Or...
problem anyway. So on my Vita, I've moved on from that to Steins Gate Zero, but there's like no gameplay in that, so that's gonna be one just for Cole, and maybe to talk about with Jala when she plays it. No, the other one is a game that people were talking about a lot like a month ago, maybe a month and a half ago. It is a free visual novel slash dating sim kind of game that was put out on Steam called Doki Doki Literature Club.
Yeah,
this is like all the rage. Like, it's all over just like fandoms and stuff. Like, it's become a meme. Everybody knows that this is not the game that it pretends to be. So it's a little bit like a Glittermint and Grow of Frog Fractions 2 kind of problem, The majority of people who seek this out are going to be people who probably, I mean, I can speak for myself, who probably wouldn't play the game that this game advertises itself to be, but is all kinds of into what it ultimately turns out to be, which, surprise, twist, it's like a psychological horror kind of game. Like, it is all kinds of ridic fucked up. In a lot of good and kind of intriguing ways. It belies this a little bit on the Steam page, and also on when you load it up, it gives a content warning saying like, hey, this is not going to be a safe experience for you if you're easily disturbed, suffer from depression or anxiety. That is a warning that should be heeded. You know, I'm a person who suffers from both, but every individual person has ebbs and flows about how resilient they're going to be about that. Without spoiling an awful lot, it is not just the case that what you're going to see is like generally disturbing, and maybe this is going to like put you into like, it specifically deals with stuff that might hit very close to home for people who, you know, go with that. So there are like portions of this where it's like, what was that game I hated a couple years back? Actual Sunlight.
Yeah.
it was another kind of like, you know, text-based kind of thing that was a really bleak depiction of depression.
Something like games seem to be, they're really good at giving a really powerful depiction of something without necessarily giving you catharsis.
Yeah. Which is crazy because so many games are about empowerment fantasies, and that plays into a little bit of this. Like when you start this up, the game that this presents itself as is like a really stock standard, straight up the middle, anime styled visual novel slash dating sim, where you are playing as just kind of like this golly gee, everyman gamer kind of guy who is dragged into. So it takes place in Japan where they have school clubs and things like that, like they're organized by students and they're sanctioned. They get, you know, blah, blah, blah. You're dragged by your best friend who's like this real chipper, but kind of like moe, you know, like I'm cute, but I oversleep and I'm klutzy and I eat too much kind of stuff. you're dragged into a literature club because like, oh, I want to spend time with you and I think this would be fun and I worry about you because you spend all your time playing games and stuff, and you end up going to this literature club that happens to be staffed, or all the other members are these really cute girls, and the game presents itself as like, oh, each of these other girls ends up having like a particular quirk. So here's the one who likes cute things. Here's the one who likes like the real, you know, dark and stormy night kind of stuff.
Isn't there something to do with cupcakes?
Yeah. Like the one who likes cute stuff, really, you know, she makes cupcakes for the group. And the one who likes the dark and stormy night stuff, like makes tea for the group and stuff. It's like, it's real like stock standard. I'm not like speaking dismissively about it. It's generally like, again, would not be for me. And for about 2 hours, 2.5 hours, it is not, because you are reading these passages of these girls flirting with your main character, and you are like writing poems because every day, you know, like, oh, let's talk to each other about the poems that we wrote. And the way that you do that is like you select words, and each word has like a connotation that will like make one of the three girls you can romance happy. It proceeds like that.
There's no way that ends well. That is how you get like mopey goth poetry.
I mean, like, you don't actually see the output of your of your poetry, and it continues like that as it kind of establishes these characters and establishes, you know, kind of like how this works, until it reaches a point where it becomes what actually makes this notable, and that is the point beyond which it is hard for me to talk about it aside from saying it happens real quick. And it twists once, and then it twists like maybe two or three different times to the point, you know, which that's all I'm going to say, because that might even be too much of a thing. Chances are, if you were going to play this, you have probably already played it. There are probably a handful of people who are probably sleeping on it just like a little bit. I will say, like, walk into it with your eyes open about the content warning kind of thing. Like, it's not just like a stock standard thing that at the front of a horror game, like, oh, this contains scenes of explicit violence and gore. It's like, no, this actually touches some live wires in a particular way. So I don't say that by way of like spoiling people. I just say that to make sure somebody doesn't walk into a situation that's going to make their day worse than it otherwise should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds great. I can't wait to play it and get scarred by it.
No, I mean, like, that's why you play, you know, that's not why you play, but like horror games are supposed to make you uncomfortable in a lot of ways, right? You know, like, it's supposed to like make you squirm, and there are any number of colors that they can paint with for that. I didn't expect it to be as well, if not painted, at least as well sketched, and to hit as close to home for me as it did. So yeah, it's neat. I think it is real interesting. I think it deserves a lot of the, like, not it's weird because like hype doesn't feel right, but also like whispers don't feel right. People who are saying this thing is cool, you should probably trust them, because it does some neat stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
cool.
Any other questions about that?
No.
Okay.
So it's a whole breed of games. It's very, we walk a tightrope whenever we discuss it. So
I feel bad about that. I hope that I've at least given something of value about those. So, mm-hmm. Dennis, I want to hear what you've been playing.
Yeah, gosh, a lot of stuff that you guys have heard about before. So obviously XCOM 2, still going strong on my Iron Man run, so I haven't screwed that up too bad yet. Played more Destiny DLC. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of Destiny headlines all the time about everything. But the thing that caught my attention this last time playing was just how good that game is with haptic feedback. Like, you forget that rumble exists so often in your controller. But as I was playing around with a new gun, and I was like, it just feels so good. Like, the kick of the gun and the firing, it feels so satisfying. And then I started paying attention to what, like, why might that be? And it really did come down to, as I was experimenting with different weapons, just the different way that rumble plays out in your hands as you're firing each of them. And, you know, your scout rifle has this like big, intense jolt. Your minigun kind of spools up in time with the shells firing off. You know, shotguns have a big rumbly kick to them, and it's such a, like, you never think about that, the rumble aspect of a game, right? But it's something that pretty much every game provides, because it's there in the controller you're playing with.
And has been for 20 years. Yeah.
Has been for 20 years. And I mean, they try to take it away with PS3 and people. There's outcry.
People lit houses on fire. It was bad news.
Well, to be fair, I mean, it was technologically impossible to, you know, put a rumble feature.
Yeah. They'd never done it before in that same size of controller.
Yeah, right.
Man, talk about all the shitty dumb trade-offs. We can't put vibration in this because we're convinced that six-axis motion controls are the wave of the future. Fuck you, Sony.
Yeah, really. Like,
I try not to get mad at companies for stuff that's in the past and has been fixed, but that is such a that's such a bullshit move.
I don't know, though. Lies. I still feel like that doesn't stand up to Nintendo's, you know, the internet is just a fad.
They've gotten better. They've gotten better.
Progress.
Yeah.
Two is double one.
I really love two is double one. I love the way the rumble or vibration or haptic feedback, whatever you want to call it, plays with sound design. Like, the way that those work in concert with each other is always the a time when I specifically noticed Rumble recently. The Switch, obviously, the HD Rumble. You can tell how many cubes are in the cup. Playing Stardew Valley, if you play that with detached Joy-Cons, like you're on the TV, when you're on your horse, the way that the rumble goes from hand to hand to kind of like mimic the of the horse gallop is like, oh, that's kind of neat. I don't know if it's like game changing, like that's a it's a fine game otherwise, it doesn't make or break it, but it's like, ah, it's, you know, it was very conscientiously designed for this system.
Yeah,
that's just probably why it's underdeveloped, is because people just don't even notice it.
Yeah, probably.
It is the baseline to video games that, you know, you're not actively thinking about it, but if it ever goes away, you notice. And it fills out the experience in a way that really is hard to articulate. But once you realize what it's doing and what it's kind of putting under everything else that you're doing, mm-hmm. it really is indispensable. And it's like, I never think about it, but as I've been saying for months, I can't put my finger on why the gunplay in Destiny feels so good, and I'm increasingly wondering if that haptic feedback has something to do with it.
Well, it probably like accumulates along with something else that is really good about it. Like Bungie, for all the like reasons that I'm kind of shitty about being dismissive of Destiny, and I'm sorry about that, everybody. Bungie has never been a slouch at like making a gun feel good to shoot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although they do manage to be really all over the board in terms of making them sound badass.
There are some weird sounding guns in the game, I can say that.
Yeah, I mean, you go from like the Mita multi-tool, which sounds like a stapler, to... I don't know, like, I think my favorite weapon is... in the expansions, you can get a pneumatic, basically marksman rifle. Every shot is just this thump.
Yeah, love pneumatic stuff. What?
That's my rifle sound.
Okay. It sounded like a very percussive laugh, and I was like, was there something weird about me?
No.
Yeah. So, like, all of a sudden, I got like really self-conscious.
you should be ashamed of your choice in gun propellants.
Yeah. In automatopoeia.
Oh man. So are you I forget. I'm sorry. Are you through the expansion, or are you just kind of like
never truly through Destiny? I've cleaned out now officially all but one of the vanilla missions. And then I am working my way. I've finished the main content for the expansion. I'm working my way through like the side quests, and my power level is still well below the max. So there's plenty to do there.
Right.
I also have not explored. I tried the heroic strikes, which are kind of a slightly more difficult version of content that was in the game. I think that the heroic strikes are kind of the well-balanced version now. Like I like mm-hmm. the medium that they reached, that it's not crushingly hard, but you can't sleepwalk through it. So that's good.
Heroic. Those are like a difficulty up, because like Halo's like one notch up of difficulty was heroic. And that was like the way that I preferred to play. Like that felt like they were what they were designing for. Right.
Yeah.
They have random mods, but the kind of the weekly Nightfall mods, which are where one of your main sources of good loot, all tend to be challenging generally in a way that's fair, but also in a way that makes it so you can't play them for fun, you have to play them to win, if that makes sense.
Right.
And the mods for the heroic ones are more like things like, but what if you were fighting robots instead of enemies? And we're not going to update any of the dialogue, but it's robots instead of Lovecraft now.
Right.
Yeah. It was fun. I played it through with a friend, so that was good. I haven't touched the updated raid content, which apparently the new raid content is easier to complete with not 6 hours of investment. So that's nice. I'll get to that eventually.
But, six hours of like we need four to six people to sit down for 6 hours straight to finish this.
Exactly. Ugh, yes.
Man.
I made it happen once and I'm so proud of that, and I'm not going to try to make it happen again. I'm excited that this new stuff is easier.
Yes, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that's Destiny. I also streamed a bit more Steven's Sausage Roll, and Ben was actually on hand to watch me hit the wall.
Yes.
Did you finally go to the second map?
Finally went to the second map. That was a mistake.
It was great. You overcame obstacles.
I did.
We can all grow together through pain.
Dude, by the way, I am so proud of you for beating the tower, the Great Tower. That is something that I was not able to do myself, so I was very impressed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Yes, I hit the difficulty spike, and I hope, please God, that was the difficulty spike, right?
The V.
Yeah, please tell
me. They decide to give you a really hard puzzle and a mechanic that they have not taught you yet at all.
Yeah. And I still hold true that that is a puzzle game that is great for having a vague idea of the solution that you can move towards without having specifically the solution in mind, if that makes any sense.
Ooh. I mean, the rewind feature has to make that a little bit more tenable, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But it can be like, just thinking through this, I kind of see how I need sausages stacked on top of each other. And then you can work towards that goal, because just getting them stacked is a chore. And then you can work, you know, towards, okay, now I need to move them to the right location. But I'm not really sure what I need to do when they're in that location. I just know I need to be around there because that's where the grills are. And then once you're there, you're like, oh, wait, no. Now that I'm here, I see I need to stack them slightly differently. And, you know, so you go through this loop that is very satisfying. You're constantly making progress towards the goal, it feels like, even though that goal has just gotten way, way, way harder to achieve.
I should be ashamed at how often that's where the grills are has been the defining factor in a couple of decisions in my life. Like my major ones, but like just minor.
Like in your rap career decision?
Yeah.
That's great. Oh, yeah. No, very, very true. Yeah. So I think in a normal, like if I sat down to play Steven's Sausage Roll before, I'd get through maybe like five or six puzzles, and I got through two in solid hour and a half of gaming.
But like they were
two very hard puzzles, so
yeah, they were.
And you're going to establish your vocabulary, so you're probably gonna like break a plane again, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is, again, you're learning a language when you're playing puzzle games. And,
right.
And man, was doing some learning.
So streaming this, obviously you were getting some feedback from Ben, or you know, getting the whole not what I would have done, but okay. from him. Were there other people who tuned in and were like participating? Like, what was the nature of that? What is the nature of streaming a game as kind of like demanding as that?
It was good. So shout out to Mai, who also joined.
Yeah.
And I think it was playing late enough that it was easy for her to hop on. She, I think, was not very familiar with the game at all, and so was kind of trying to take it in and understand it and then kind of play along.
Okay.
All in one fell swoop. Whereas I'd spent an entire world of puzzles building up to this difficulty spike, she's watching and kind of taking it all in. And that was cool. I don't think I directly like copped any solutions, solutions from her. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like it's the kind of game where you can kind of put yourself in the driver's seat mentally and like you articulate, not what I would have done. More so on my side, though, just because I knew I had an audience, it had me verbally processing what I was doing a lot more.
When you otherwise wouldn't have.
Yeah. And it forced me to almost, you know, things that would kind of not be fully articulated in my mind as I'm flicking through them, to actually articulate them and be like, okay, I cannot take the horizontal sausage over here because it will get stuck on this corner. And so I need to find another way to do that. So that's out. So then this vertical sausage I could take over in one of two ways. And way A has these advantages and way B, you know, and talking through it that way, most of the time, you know, as I'm thinking, the most that gets verbalized in my head is like not horizontal.
Right.
But actually articulating why I think was very useful in just because I'm trying to like explain my thought process. So they're not watching someone staring at a screen, motionless for 5 minutes.
Right.
That actually helped me get to some better solutions and rule out options faster, where I'd kind of swirl otherwise.
Right.
It was a great time. So I think when I play that again, I'll stream it again and happy to have people in the peanut gallery. Did not feel judged or harried or any of that stuff. So that's good.
I think that's remarkable. And I'm wondering from whence comes my anxiety just hearing about this, because like I don't stream things that are as difficult as Steven's sausage roll are, but
you just stream Siren.
Yeah, I guess, but like I get so flustered is the right word for it. I hate being stuck when people are watching because I feel like it's a performance.
Oh, sure.
I feel like as frustrated as I am also in my head, the people watching are like way more frustrated than I am.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
I don't think that's true, but
I know it's not true, but that's just the way it plays out. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's the way it feels. So, you know, I don't just commend you for solving these difficult puzzles, but also dealing with an audience. That would be a kind of emotional ringer for me that I don't know that I would willingly sign myself up for.
Well, albeit it was an audience of two. So I was going to say, right, it was an audience that both were great kind of sure.
That might even make it worse. Like, yeah. Ben especially, but Ben and Mai are two of the most patient people that I know.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It was good times. Ben, I would love to hear your experience watching. You've chimed in with a couple of thoughts, but.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to give away any of the solutions, so I tried to be pretty silent. But, you know, there's just, like, small logical things, like, where if you see, like, a grill and a that weird, like, it's like a three-square pattern or whatever, you know which way the sausage has to be for it to be able to cook on that. And so just small things like that can kind of help you, like, kind of focus what the solution should be. So,
yeah.
But you know, good luck on the rest of the game, because I'm not gonna be able to help you on it. So.
yeah. So that was me.
Yeah.
Cool. And Ben, round us out. Last grind of the year.
Oh my god, so much pressure. Okay. All right. So I continued playing Evil Within. It continues to be pretty fun. The point I hit the paywall, so gotta pony up the bucks if I wanna keep playing the game. So I'm going to wait until the Christmas sale to see if I can get a deal on it. But then if it doesn't go on sale, I'll probably just pick it up anyway and fill it out. It's still a lot of fun. I still like it a lot. Still reminds me a lot of like Resident Evil 4. Environment's really cool. Shooting mechanics are really cool. Upgrade system's really cool. So
yeah.
Pour some sugar on that game. But
it wasn't mentioned explicitly the last time we talked about this, but it was brought up in chat or in Slack shortly afterwards, which is your progress from the demo is carried over.
Correct.
So you just load that up as a save. So
yes,
if people are worried about putting time into this, what feels like a very substantial demo, don't. Don't worry. Like, put the time in. Don't worry about, you know, putting, yeah, losing that.
Sure.
Yeah.
That feels very wise.
Oh, yeah. It would be a real misstep if they didn't do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I already put 5 hours into the demo, I think. So that will not be wasted time if you play the game. So, So not much has changed between that and the last time we talked about it. So I'm ready to move on if you guys don't have any questions.
No questions.
Mm-mm. All right. Other game I played was Banner Saga. I played and beat that game. It was interesting. There's only two mechanics kind of going on. There's like the choice mechanics that go on when you're not fighting people, and then there's the fighting system, which is not 100% like XCOM, but it's like a grid system fighting where you're kind of controlling how your people move, you know?
It's like a Final Fantasy Tactics light kind of thing.
Yeah. So those were the only two real mechanics in the game, so I was kind of surprised that I mean, it's a pretty limited game, but at the same time, I think in the credits, when it talks about the developers of the game, there's only three people who made this game. It's very that's pretty game. Impressive.
Wow.
Yeah.
A small Kickstarter-funded team.
Yeah. So what I'm guessing is those were the three programmers. They probably had like a bunch of artists on commission. So it's probably something like that. It was a good game. I don't know if it was like great or anything. I'd be curious to see how the Banner Saga 2 compares to the Banner Saga and like what kind of updates they made to it. Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like the story was leading up to something that immediately would happen in the Banner Saga 2, or was it more like this is established in like a world and kingdoms kind of thing?
The first one seems pretty standalone, so you can kind of play it and kind of, yeah, it's not like a cliffhanger or anything like that. I feel like, it does a good job of, being like brutal in the sense of it gets harder and harder and harder as the game goes on. So, I think that's good if they intended that.
Like harder to make choices, or the individual battles are like demanding, or like there's no tolerance for fucking up.
So when you're like traveling in this game, it shows you like a wide shot of all the people you're walking with, you know, and it tells you the numbers of how many people you have and kind of a breakdown of like what type of person they are. If they're like a varl or if they're a human or whatever. And it shows you how many food resources you have and how many days that'll last you with the current number of people you have. And that decreases as the game progresses. And so anxiety increases as the game progresses.
Like, how can I keep all these people happy and fed?
Yes.
And you can't.
Yes.
Cannibalism.
There's like a single resource you have that you can kind of barter with, and it's your renown. So if you fight battles and win them, you increase your renown, but you can trade that in for a couple different things. You can either upgrade party members that you have, or you can spend it on food so that your people don't die. So
I didn't know you could do that.
You can if you go to the marketplaces.
Huh.
Yeah.
You just say like, oh, you've heard of me, give me stuff.
Yes. And you're suddenly less famous because it's like, man, he was out of food. He's not that cool.
You cashed in your goodwill, you know?
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. So I definitely like that aspect of it. It did a good job of making you feel in a comfortable place at the beginning of the game and making it, and kind of stripping that away layer by layer.
Yeah.
The fighting system was okay. It wasn't great. Basically, the end strategy that I had is get people really weak but don't kill them, because it's a ping pong sort of strategy on turns where it's not like XCOM. I believe XCOM, the way it works is every member of your party gets a turn, and then every member of the alien gets a turn, and it goes back and forth with that. Mm-hmm. And this one, it's you get a turn, they get a turn. You get a turn, they get a turn. And it'll just grab a person in order.
Based on their speed or initiative or stuff like that.
Something like that, yeah. So if you kill a weak person, you're just making their turn stronger because they have a stronger pool of people now that they can pull from. So that's one thing I kind of disliked about the gameplay, is it's kind of counterintuitive gameplay, where it's like, you don't want to kill people. That will put you in a worse position. You just want to get people to one on their health bar because their strength and their health are related. And so then they'll just waste turns doing really weak attacks against you, and then you can kind of kill off the bigger people.
To be fair, that's a fairly legitimate military tactic in real life.
Sure. I don't know if the game intended to make that the main strategy, though.
Right.
I don't know. So, I don't know. It was just a weird gameplay mechanic that came out of the game.
They were definitely setting out to do something different than your standard, you know, cut down people as fast as you can convention. And they succeeded at that. Like you said, it feels very different than anything else that you've played tactically.
Yeah.
Whether or not... I think they maybe made it a little too inscrutable. Like, I'd never quite finished the game, but I never felt like I had totally grokked. Like
mastered it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what I was doing. So maybe they made it a little too complicated, or I just didn't have enough time with it. And then it also is not, you know, to say how fun the new mechanic was, because you feel like you're doing good things. You're killing people, but then you're getting punished for it.
Yeah. It's an interesting system with like the main choice being whether you attack their shield or whether you attack their like life.
Mm-hmm.
attacking their shield will make them weaker in the future, but then attacking their life will limit the power that they can do to you. So, I mean, that's kind of an interesting choice. But overall, it seems like there's not like a huge effect which strategy you pick. Like, you kind of get the same end result no matter what. So, yeah, I don't know. Overall, it was interesting. If it's on sale, it might be worth a playthrough. If it's like $5 or something like that, I wouldn't pay too much more than that to play the game.
It's popped up in a handful of bundles. I'm positive people have this sitting in their library.
In a humble bundle somewhere, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying it dismissively. It's just like it's a game that I think a lot of people might have by accident.
And again, super, super impressive if it's like three people on the core team that made this. Like, yeah. It is very good considering that. And it, yeah. But yeah, I think that's mostly all I have to say about that. Any questions on the Banner Saga?
No.
Mm-mm. All right.
Are you seeking out Banner Saga too, or are you going to let that rest for a while?
I mean, I think I have other things on my wish list that I would go for before I went for that. Yeah. So maybe one day I'd pick it up. Right now it's $20 on Steam, so
right.
I don't know if I'd pull the trigger on that one just yet.
Mm-hmm.
The last game I have on my list of what I've been playing this week is Opus Magnum. I picked up.
Yeah,
that looks interesting.
Zytronics game. Yeah.
So I talked about this maybe a couple months ago.
You watched somebody stream and like talk through the way that it works.
Yeah, I think Jonathan Blow streamed it a couple months ago and was playing it. It's a weird kind of game. You're basically building molecules from small elements or whatever, if you want to kind of think of it from a chemistry point of view. And that's kind of what it is. The theme is you're like what's the word for it?
Like an alchemist. Kind of like,
and you're literally making like gold from lead in certain cases. But you're doing it with kind of like simple machines. So what you're doing is you will start with a handful of molecules, like three or four different things, and you're trying to bond and make these bond these elements together and make like a bigger molecule that might be like six or seven different things. And there's different processes that you need to go through in order to do that. Like one might be you can bond two things together if you moved them to certain squares. You can upgrade certain elements to other elements if they pass over a square with a certain symbol on it. And then you can upgrade another type of thing if you have it in a position and you move another type of element to a different position. Sorry if that sounds confusing. That's kind of like the gameplay mechanics. But you're basically programming the simple machine to make these molecules like mass production wise. Interesting thing about it is they rate you on like three criteria when you make these machines. It's there's cycles, which is like the number of steps it takes in order to make this molecule. There's area, which is like the amount of space your machine takes up. So it might be like a quarter of the screen, or it might be the entire screen sort of thing. And then the last thing is cost. Like each part of the contraption of a machine has a certain cost to it. So the more complicated the component that you use that can possibly do more, the more expensive it is as well. So it also like favors like, hey, can you do this really simply and elegantly?
Yeah. With the trade-off being like, if you can do this simply with cheaper parts, oftentimes there might be more steps, so that sacrifice is different. Like you're trying to keep like three different dimensions of efficiency in your head that you're going to be graded on.
Yeah, and the nice thing about it is they don't really punish you for doing one way or another. They just give you feedback at the end, like here's what the standings are for people making this molecule, and here's what the averages are, and this is where you fall in line. So consistently, I've been low on the cycles, so I've done it very efficiently, but it's been high cost and high area. So,
well, there's also a fourth one, which is you can make an animated GIF of your machine and post it if you want. So, like, there would be an incentive to, like, holy shit, I made this amazing machine. I want to, like, broadcast this to the world.
If you're really proud, I've never been proud of any machine because they've been high cost and high area, but I am proud of the low cycle part of it at least.
Mm-hmm.
There's like so a lot of it's kind of like it seems very similar to like multi-threaded programming is kind of what the game is like, where it's like, okay, here's this whenever you like put a simple machine like I guess it's more or less like a lever where it's like you can rotate it, you can have it pick up a thing and drop off a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's more complicated one, there's like a piston one where it can extend it out.
It's It's like load this into memory, load it out of memory, like managing registers in assembly or something like that, right?
Yeah, kind of like that. And there's like a source area where it has the element that you can pull it from. And then there's kind of like a sync area, which is the final molecule. And if you move something there, it'll like disappear and go in there.
And that's like crazy in line with what Zachtronics has done in the past. Like this is the guy who did like TIS 100 and, you know, there's also like Space Chem. This is from the same guy who made Space Chem, which is all about like managing inputs and outputs and kind of transitional steps to make something that you want, like all of it, like his whole idea is like making increasingly fiddly metaphors for programming.
That's not far off. There's a weird narrative in the game where you're like kind of like a pretentious like college student in the first chapter, and then you get your like first job in the second chapter, and it kind of progresses from there. And then there's like a weird like Gwent-like thing where like halfway through one of the games, they're just like, here's this random like side game that has like nothing to do with the main game, but it's kind of fun. So I played that for a little bit. It's kind of like a weird like Chinese checkers sort of thing, but there's like,
we don't have to be racist about it.
Well,
no, I know what you're, sorry. That was a dumb joke. But I know what you're talking about. Like
they basically place like random marbles on a board that looks very similar to a Chinese checkers board. But there's rules to how you can pull them off, and you basically like start on the outside and work in. And you have to pull them off in pairs according to certain rules. So it's like it's like
Chinese chess.
So it's like, it's kind of like a weird abstract puzzle game that's kind of in the middle of the game. That's kind of like it's like a time sink or whatever. You can just like spend time kind of like mindlessly playing the game. It's like Sudoku kind of.
Yeah, it's like a distraction.
You can kind of play it on autopilot, and it's like a nice relaxer game.
Which is like the opposite of any other Zachtronics thing.
Yeah, that's right. It's like a nice relief from the rest of the game, I guess.
Right.
But yeah, overall, the game's pretty fun. Once you get the hang of it, it's pretty cool. For a while, like for the first couple of puzzles, it's like it's a little bit frustrating because you're not exactly sure how to do everything. But once you kind of get the hang of what you can do and how you can make certain pistons work with one another, it's like it becomes very manageable where you're like, yeah, I can do this. This is not hard to like construct this sort of thing. So then it becomes more of like an efficiency game of, all right, what's the quickest way that I can construct this? It's been pretty fun so far. I'm only, I think, two or three chapters in, so I'm only like a third of the way through the game.
Right.
I'll probably play it out unless there's a difficulty spike like in Steven's Sausage Roll or something like that. But we'll see. So far I'd say so good, but yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I think that's all I got. Of course, I've also been playing Magic and Rocket League, just there's any ambiguity of that closing out 2017. But
of course.
Yeah.
We have to end where we began. hey, Ben, do you want a copy of Banner Saga 2? I have one sitting in my Humble account.
Sure. Yeah, send it to me.
Yeah, cool.
All right. Thanks, man.
Mm-hmm.
Merry Christmas.
I mean, like, it didn't cost, I'm sure it cost me something at some point, but it's just like sitting here. I already have it in my library outside of this. So
wait, to be clear, do you have two copies of it so you could play it yourself as well?
Yes. I checked before I volunteered it, just so you didn't get some idea that I was like, you know, selfless or something.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. Glad we got that one cleared up.
Cool.
So, by the way, segue, do you guys have any of the final numbers of Duckstream?
Yes. Right. So I just I just put that together. Well, how about this? Do we want to button up and we'll do that in the credits?
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's button up.
Okay. Yeah, let's button it up. That's the first time I've ever gotten you to enthusiastically like go for a button up in a very long time.
Oh man. Sorry. I will correct this in 2018.
Okay, cool. Let me pull this up. I have so many just like text documents in my shit. Okay. Total combined there were two different kinds of donations people would do on the stream itself. Also, hey, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Why don't we tell them what they could do next? They can appreciate these donation totals. A couple weekends ago, we did Duckstream, our yearly charity streaming event to benefit the Transactive Gender Center. So with the direct donations, minus the fees that come out of that, plus t-shirt sales, plus like Twitch stuff I barely understand, like subscriptions and bits and just weird stuff people...
Twitch Voodoo.
Yeah, Twitch Voodoo. The 2017 total was $7,562.45.
That's awesome.
Yes. So the amazing thing about this, you would think, that's a little bit lower than 2016's total. We have the Trump bump for that, and there are any number of other things that go in with that. However, this took us over $30,000, like over the course of all the charity events we've done, Duckstream and Duckspring together. It's $31,129 raised for the Transactive Gender Center.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So that is thanks to everybody who gave and everybody who watched and everybody who helped spread the word. So that is amazing is what it is. So thank you, everybody, for doing that.
Yeah, it's like super heartening to see this every year, to just like see like very selfless people like for, you know, 72 hours. Yeah, that's really cool.
Very much so. So thank you. We're going to be back next year and we're going to do it bigger and better. Have no doubt. So in addition to that, I want everybody to have a very safe and fun holiday season, week, or whatever. Even if you don't celebrate something religiously, you're probably going to be spending time with friends or taking some time off, some time for yourself. And I want you to do that in the best possible way. Whether or not that involves listening to Duckfeed Podcast, who knows, but it is a sentiment I want to get out there regardless. Please vote in the title of the year. Look on social media, either on Twitter or on Facebook, or in our Slack for that to go. We'll keep the voting open pretty much, I think, until the day of we record the next one is when I'll tabulate the results. But again, that is a fun thing to do. And, you know, the usual stuff, the Patreon and ratings and reviews. We've gotten some nice reviews. Yeah. Am I forgetting anything, everybody?
No, happy holidays.
Yeah. So I want to thank all of you, by which I mean the people on the call here, for it's been a very fun year of this show. A lot of laughs, a lot of gaming experiences shared vicariously. I want to extend thanks to Jala. She is not here tonight, but she has been more active than ever helping us out, being a part of the main cast, and that has been wonderful as well. And huge thanks to everybody who's listened, everybody who's participated in multiplayer. 2017 sucked in a lot of ways. This was not one of them. It's been a very good time. So yeah, cool. So until next time, which again, we're not going to be here next week, but we'll be back in 2018. I have been Cole Ross. You can find me at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me at D Furia on Twitter.
I've been David Meyersmith. You can find me online.
just type in his name in a text field.
Just Google it.
Yeah.
I've been Ben.
Wherever there is text, I will be there.
Just send out the text signal. I've been Ben Merkel, and I've been Ben Merkel at the level.
Cool. And stick around for some titles. Sorry, I forgot how we did that. Okay. Cool. Who has titles? I imagine there are lots, because I have lots.
I got some.
Go ahead, Ben.
All right. I wrote them down on a pizza box. I have, hey, Dennis, tell me about the never-ending field of dongs.
Can I put that as a second on a never-ending field of flip-flopping dongs?
Yeah, that's fine.
Of flopping dongs.
I also have I Can Comprehend the Dongs. I also have That's Where the Grills Are. And I also have so many text documents in my shit. That's what cool. I got.
All right, Dennis.
I have Thumb Co-op. The Pyramid of Giza.
Okay.
Delightment. And Sphere Orbs. And I'll just say that I really like That's Where the Grills Are.
I'll put that as a second vote for That's Where the Grills Are.
Yes.
Okay. David, how about you?
I slacked off. I did not have anything.
That's all right. Let's see here. I have Auto Op, like auto co-op, co-op with yourself. I also have A Never-Ending Field of Flip-Flopping Ding-Dongs. I have The Pyramid of Giza. I have The Original. I have Sphere World instead of Sphere Orbs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I have Battle Something. I like That's Where the Girls Are. And
I really
lot.
Like.
That's I didn't write that one down because it was something that it was a joke that I made. I don't like doing that too often.
Likewise,
I do it a lot, but That's Where the Girls Are was good.
Take it. Strong start to 2018.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, we're going to talk about Christmas plans. So I usually like leave everything up to the goodbye end on this. So let's do that for everybody just so they're comfortable. All right. This is a lot of fun, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.